in to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Right, hello and welcome to episode number 131 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and Sean Orford. Comfortable?
I'm good. I'm just adjusting my dress, as they would say.
You're just in your belt. Looks like you're about to undo your... Well...
Yeah. I put on weight, you know, this year since I stopped running because of damaging my leg.
And we're, what, 3-4 weeks from Christmas?
Yeah.
You need to be careful.
Yep. Yeah, Conrad had a word with me the other day, actually.
Did he?
Yeah, so...
Did he get his ultrasound sonic...
No, I don't know. Anywhere near me. He'll say, there's two people in there, come on. So, New Year, I should be running like a like something. A Jaguar.
Jaguar, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Better than a gazelle, probably. Gazelles are right.
Yeah, jaguars eat gazelles. So. Get out of my way, I'm coming through. Yeah.
Hello to any new listeners. Well, hello to everyone out there, of course. Liveinthepresent.co.uk. If you want to know more about who we are, what we do, although we mainly just do the show at the moment, what we are...
Plotting. We're amazing people.
We're amazing folks. We're plotting things
to take over the world.
One of these days. this time next year, eh?
Yeah, we're going to be millionaires, aren't we?
Yeah. But the thing is, we talk about this show, money isn't that important as we dissect and we find out. So,
yeah.
I think we've come to the realisation that we just don't need to bother.
Yeah, we're just going to live in poverty. Why not?
Yeah. Slightly sidetracked before we get on the show. But yeah, I mentioned a book a couple of weeks ago called The Great Disruption, which is, it was published 5 years ago, but it's a lot of its fables are coming true in terms of environmental damage and stuff like this that's going on in Syria, actually, and kind of immigration.
Yeah.
About how the world needs to basically cut its reliance on growth, our addiction to growth. We need to step back and we all need to learn to live with much less in our lives. Because if we don't learn to, it's going to happen anyway.
Yeah. No choice.
Yep.
That idea that as the planet warms, the people from the equator would have to move north or south to get away from the arid, fruitless weather conditions. They have to move north.
Yeah.
Can't avoid it.
Well, there's a cool... I've read quite a bit about in Syria. We're not talking about that today.
But
it's a hot topic about how... The issues in Syria stem from a 5-year period where there was quite a massive drought, starting about 2008, I think, maybe 2007, which doesn't get mentioned much, but I've looked it up, it happened, and basically a lot of, 50-60% of people went unemployed, and they all marched to the capital and started, demanding things, and it all kicked off, and then here we are.
But if you look at LA in the States, and they've had sort of virtually no rain for 5-6 years, haven't they?
I know, yeah. I think El Nino's on the way. I think they're due a lot this winter, actually. But
they need
it. But more than they should be, and there's going to be, well, I don't know.
They need it.
Stuff's going on. Anyway, this week we're not talking about that. We're talking about kids flying the nest, aren't we?
Yeah.
And how it can be, well, to be, I can't imagine my little ones believing me.
But they're going to be big, hairy kids with bother boots and prickly chins.
Yeah, they'll be like, get out!
Get out of my ass, yeah.
But yeah.
They start smelling.
But before we do that, how's your week been? You've been all right?
Yeah, okay, it's good. We've been to Harrogate and the Country Living Fair. So
I haven't been there since I was a kid.
Oh, Harrogate is wonderful.
And I was there, I tell you, when I was there, it was the Barcelona Olympics.
Blimey.
92, probably? 92.
Blimey.
So I was 11. And we stayed at a B&B, and I remember watching the opening ceremony in this B&B.
Yeah.
That's about all I remember. I remember, is there some kind of cave you can go to in Harrogate?
I've never seen a cave in Harrogate.
Wishing well in there, or something.
I don't know. I'll have to check it out.
Anyone from Harrogate?
Let us know.
Let me know.
Betty's Tea Rooms is the thing.
Okay.
And they have this big conference centre where this...
Isn't that in York, Betty's Tea Room?
Yeah, Harrogate.
Harrogate is York?
Yeah, in York.
What?
Betty's Tea Rooms is in Harrogate, which is a town, and also in York, which is another town.
Okay, right.
But they're both in Yorkshire.
Gotcha.
In the Shire of York.
But not York and Harrogate are different places.
They are.
Yeah, just get that clear.
Yeah, okay. So geography wasn't a good thing for you at school then?
I did A-level geography, yeah.
Did you?
I think I got...
Did you fail?
I got a C, I think.
Did you?
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, A-O.
Very good. Right. No, good. And family outing, really. So taking Pam and sisters and things up, you know, good.
Cool.
Good. Yeah.
Excellent, good. Excellent. Well, yeah, we're gearing up for Christmas, really, in our house. So we've got, advent calendar excitement, and Will's got this little elf that he wakes up to each morning that we hide it in a different place, and it kind of tells him how he's been the previous day, because he's going to report back to Father Christmas.
Wow.
It's quite cool.
Does he have to find it?
Yeah. And he's got these little Velcro hands so you can strap him to things. So he was kind of hanging from a lamp the other morning. He's like, there he is, Daddy, look! It's pretty cool, actually. I haven't been excited about Christmas in ages, but seeing his little face.
Yeah, no, it's lovely. Yeah.
Yeah. As we lie to him on a daily basis.
Yeah. I have little Emily... who I've been kind of an honorary kind of granddad to, I guess, over the years. But she's, I say little, she's 10 now, 9. She comes around and does the Christmas tree in my office with me. Ah. So we're doing that together. And that's like a special time at Christmas.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, let's move on. We're talking about kids. And we've had an email from a listener of ours, Angela. Just before I go into this, we do love getting emails about any subject, but if there's something you want us to talk about in this show, then please do drop us a line, because we pretty much always do accommodate them.
Yep.
And Angela sent us a lovely email about various things, but at the end she asked us to talk about an issue she's dealing with, and she's having trouble. Her daughter's in her second year at university, and basically Angela is having trouble kind of letting go. Hate saying goodbye. In fact, I'll read what she wrote. My daughter's second year at uni. I miss her terribly. I realised I gave her the wings to fly and I wanted to use them, but it's hard. I'm better this year than I have been, but it's still really hard. I find that each time I have to say goodbye, instead of getting easier, it gets harder. And this is second year at uni, man. So, I mean, I remember when I went to uni, I was upset. My mum and dad left me in Newcastle. I don't know, from my mum's point of view, I don't know what it was. I think it was hard, but, you know.
Need to ask her.
Not that hard.
Yeah. Thank God we got rid of him.
Yeah, so, but this is a real issue, man, because I can't imagine, I go a night, I can stand a night without my little ones, but then I start to miss them.
I think that it goes back to, if you look at attachment theory, and... we're looking at how we were attached at the beginning of our lives. When we were born, what was our attachment with our parents? Was it positive? Was it safe? Was it secure attachment? Or was it negative, anxious or angry attachment, you know, fearful?
Yep.
If we fear abandonment and we fear aloneness because of our attachment problems, then to lose somebody either through death or through divorce or through... a child leaving home leaves us in a state of crisis. And that's something that, if it's going on, very often you need some kind of therapeutic input to get that kind of balance right again.
Yeah, well, we don't know much else about Angela's setup, actually, other than that. So we'll talk about a few things.
We talk about empty nest syndrome. You know, where a mother has maybe had several children, and her life has been about fulfilling the needs of those children and maybe a husband as well. And then at the end of it, the children have all gone. And the purpose in life, the meaning in life, is gone. Who am I? You know, I'm a mother. No, you're not. They've all gone. So who are you? I don't know.
Yeah.
And that creates all kinds of issues. I think that one of the things for us as a society... is that in maybe 2-3 generations ago, where we had big extended families, and if you got 17 kids and one of them clears off, you know, to go and work on the farm next door, it's not such a big deal. You know, as families have got smaller, and maybe you've got 4 kids or 3 kids or 2 kids or maybe 1 child, and the issues of the attachments to those children around you are that much stronger, that much greater, and when you lose them, the effect is huge.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, if you lose one in 17, it's like, okay, that one's gone off and we'll get letters. Yeah. Sure. If you only got two and one goes, you've just lost 50% of your kids.
Mm.
Yeah, so it is hugely different.
Yeah, no, I bet. I mean, the demographics of Britain are changing big time, aren't they, even just the last 10, 15 years?
Yep.
And I can see it amongst my group of pals who are all in their early 30s-ish. There aren't many of us that yet have started having kiddies. We've got two. Not sure. Might have another one. Not sure. Probably would definitely no more than three, I wouldn't have thought. you can't imagine.
Oh, my God, no more than three.
So, yeah, I can see why, yeah, just from a mathematical point of view. Yeah, no, I mean, not that if you had eight, nine kids, losing one would still be horrendously traumatic, I'm sure. But yeah, the demographics are shifting, aren't they?
If you think about a human female, the way that it works from a reproductive point of view is that the system is designed to reproduce a child about every 2 years, because if you breastfeed, it suppresses your ovulation. So that the chances of getting pregnant while you're breastfeeding are diminished. So you would take one child through to weaning, and then you'd be available to start to grow the next one.
Yeah.
So about every 2 years is a natural cycle. Well, you're talking about something where in a normal, natural situation, if such a thing should exist, you're talking about a female having maybe 10 to 20 children.
Yeah.
Yeah, over that period of time.
Imagine she was.
Yeah, we would assume from past history that not all of those children would survive through to maturity. But you're talking about huge families.
Mm-hmm.
And I do work with people, especially North Wales. We get big families where I work with someone who is maybe one of 11 children, you know, one of 12 children, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And when if you were an only child or you were in a small family, that must be like, wow, that's really... really strange. I was one of five in my family.
Yep.
And my parents, my father was one of eight, I think. Yeah.
Blimey.
So, but they were quite big families.
So really. Your family's just gone all over, man. Just yeah. Spread, I'll bet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's kind of the goal of humanity anyway, you know, when you get down to it, the nitty gritty of all living things just want to reproduce, don't they?
Yeah.
From like cells.
Yep.
Right up to. Yep. The top of the food chain.
Yeah, even atoms break and reform and,
mm-hmm.
and do stuff. Yeah.
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 But without getting too caught up in all that wonderful nitty gritty, you've got a cool bit passage you want to read from that nice little book.
Well, there's a guy called Khalil Gibran. He was born in 18. I should tell you from the book here. He was actually born in 1883. And he died in 1931. But he's written several books that are quite amazing. And the one that I'm quoting from here is called The Prophet. And the story is about a guy who arrives on an island, and he is the prophet.
Uh-huh.
And the people of the island ask him things. And they ask him about children. So a woman who held a babe against her bosom said, "Speak to us of children." And then the prophet says, "Your children are not your children. They are the sons and the daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but they are not from you. And though they are with you, yet they do not belong to you." It's like they're not your property. They are people who are attempting to be themselves. So he goes on to say, you may give them your love, but you can't give them your thoughts, because they've got thoughts of their own. Yeah, and you may house their bodies, but you can't house their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, because they're the future. You know, we represent the present and the past, don't we?
Yeah.
So he's saying that you can't actually visit tomorrow. You know, that's their world. Well, you have to allow them to be your world, and their world, not your world. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you may strive to be like them, but don't seek to make them like you. Yeah, allow them to be what they need to be. And he goes on, and I put it in as a resource that is useful to go to.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, effectively he's saying that your children don't belong to you. They are a part of you, yeah, and they come through you, but you don't own them. And there comes a point where you have to allow them to go.
Yeah.
and to go and to move on in their own development. But it's the development of human consciousness. It's the development of human society. Mm-hmm. It's evolution moving out there. We want to hold people back because we're scared of losing them, and we're stopping that evolving process. They're not evolving.
So by clinging on too much, we're doing our kiddies a bit of a disservice, really.
Yeah.
We're stunting their growth somewhat, which is might be tricky to hear, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe we need to equip our kids with the skills to be able to survive, you know, whether it's like, you know, cooking, knitting, sewing, eating, you know, whatever, so that when they go out, they can function.
Yeah, OK. But from Angela's point of view, just talking to her then, her daughter might be perfectly fine, might be off having a ball.
Yeah.
But it's Angela at home who's, you know, in trouble.
Yeah.
So how can we help Angela?
Well, if you think about attachment, we attach to things. All of us attach to stuff. We might be attached to our computers, our cars, our jobs, other people, our house, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly get attached to our children, and we get attached to our partners and our families.
Yep.
And that's natural. Attachment is a normal thing. What we have to look at is that if we lose an attachment, like somebody dies, we get divorced, we retire, someone leaves us, you know, we're made redundant, whatever, that we have to look at that in a mindful way, which is, OK, this attachment is coming to a close, or it's changing, it's moving, it's different, yeah? And I need a different kind of attachment around me now to fulfil that bit that I've lost. So I don't need to chase that attachment, I need to allow that to be what it needs to be, but then I need to, OK, what is it I'm going to replace it with? And maybe I become a macrame bag weaver. Or, you know, I do something else. Yeah, I start to consciously, rather than sitting there in kind of grief and bereavement, thinking, oh, I've lost. Actually, rather than losing something, it's changing the mindset, so I'm going towards something that's new.
Yeah, there's a great film, I'm just trying to write it down before I forget, called About Schmidt.
About Schmidt.
Who I think is Walter Schmidt is the central character, played by Jack Nicholson.
All right.
Fairly recent movie, maybe 5-6 years ago. But it's called, basically, the premise is his wife dies. He's an elderly-ish chap. His wife dies. He's built this big business empire, which has been taken over by his son, and he's basically been cut out of the business quite a bit. And he's struggling to come to terms with his new life, which is he's on his own. He's been used to having everything cooked for him and cleaned. He's been used just to going and work and just doing that 16 hours a day. And he hires a camper van or buys a camper van, just sets off on the open road. It's cool, kind of bittersweet, heartfelt, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that's talking about getting used to being without his wife, but I guess the same could be said for our kiddies as well, innit?
The issues of dealing with change, everything changes, everything moves. What happens, obviously I'm thinking about a case that I can't really talk about, but what happens if you were to lose a leg is a different you. You know, the you with one leg is completely different. A unidexter is completely different to a double dexter, you know, you've only got one leg. What do you can't stand, you can't run, you can't do the things that you used to do. And you have to come to terms with your loss of attachment with this limb that's gone.
Yep.
And I think that when we lose people, it can feel like that, like our support has gone.
Yeah.
You know, even when our kids go, we don't realise the relationship and the nature of the relationship until it's gone.
Yeah. And that's true. Well, I mean, you know, mine are well. It's going to be a while before they're itching to move out. But, you know, there's even things now happening early on in both their lives where I'm getting used to doing something for them and enjoying it, you know. Maybe a simple thing like taking Will to the loo to help him because he needs a hand kind of getting up and various bits and bobs.
Mm.
But just the other day he said something like, "No, Daddy, I can do it. Go and wait outside." And it was a bit like, ah! He doesn't need me.
I'm now redundant.
You know, he asked me to shut the door because he wanted a bit of privacy.
Yep.
So yeah, it was kind of like, oh, for a minute I was like a bit upset, but then it obviously came to and was like, that's cool. He's growing.
Mm.
So amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. But what you're saying is that the detachment process has already begun.
Mm.
You know, that we start off with a child that is so connected to the mother it's inside her and connected by an umbilical tube.
Yeah.
And as it comes out, the process that happens there is this child moving away from the mother, both emotionally, physically, cognitively, moving away. Mm. And in the normal set of circumstances, that child starts to move away and another child is now conceived. So you've got this conveyor belt of people. Yeah, when there's no child coming in behind, I think that's when we start to get problems of attachment that we're talking about here.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about loss in general through this show a little bit, not just about children, but yeah, I've seen it in within my family, you know, when people have retired, because I've got kind of parents and in-laws that get into that age and they've kind of retired, and that's a big deal, because all of a sudden there's kind of all this time with nothing to do. But then, luckily, just in the nick of time, grandkids have come on the scene.
Yeah.
So that takes up all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And in extended families, that's what happens, isn't it? The natural flows, you know, that you've got enough cousins, aunts, uncles that are all around helping and supporting.
Yeah.
And when we break down to these nuclear units, we don't have that. It's like Angela in a big extended situation. Okay, her child is moving on to do other things. There would be other children around that she'd be involved in supporting. They would come in and fill the vacuum.
Yep.
That natural process. I do get the things the other way around. I get parents who are saying to me, oh, for God's sake, are these children never going to leave home?
Well, that's another relevant issue these days. You know, I was 20... Well, I went to uni for a few years, but came back for maybe two more, till I was about 23, 24.
Mm-hmm.
And then got a job and got a B and then, yeah, got a flat. So, yeah. But even that, by kind of going back 50 years, that's probably quite 25, being 24, 25 and leaving home is quite a late age, isn't it?
Psychology is talking about kids staying at home maybe till they're like into their early 30s now.
Yep.
Because of financial issues and stuff like that, that it's going
to
be like
trying
that.
Trying to scrape together 20 grand for a deposit is not easy.
Yeah, but you do get parents, because I'm thinking of several at the moment, who are at a point where they're thinking, if I could just wrap the kids' sandwiches in a route map and tell them to sod off, you know, would be really good. You know, we need some of our time now.
Yeah.
So it does work both ways. There are people that are desperately anxious. I think we're back to attachment and early attachment when we were born and what was happening for us, whether it's easy for us to let go.
Yeah.
Or difficult.
It's never been easier as well to keep in touch as well, has it? Because, I mean, when I was at uni, I mean, in, where did I go? 2001. Yeah. In the end. So, yeah, mobile phones were on the scene. Yeah, I had a mobile phone so I could text and call my folks whenever I wanted, but
there
was no Facebook. Skype probably wasn't really around, because... there was no broadband. You had to dial,
to
get on the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
56k modems and all that. Yeah. So now it's super easy, man. There's no excuses not to stay in touch. And what I'm thinking is that's obviously quite a good thing, because you can just drop someone a line. But then if someone's gone away and they're having a ball, and again, I don't want to judge Andrew's situation here, but maybe the person you're sending a message to doesn't reply instantly, and you're starting to think, well, maybe they're okay, or why aren't they replying? You know, that's going to kind of breed that kind of. Well,
it, when you look at evolutionary change, you know, the new system used to be the merchants that would be moving around from community to community, buying and selling, and they would actually bring the news with them because they were the mobile energy that went between communities.
Yep.
But that would be maybe you see someone at the horse fair this year, and then they'd go off and do what they're doing. You'd meet them in a year's time, and then you'd catch up on the news. And you know, there'd be a list of people that dropped dead, and a list of people that had been born, and whatever.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, because it is so instant, that the idea of loss is instant too.
Yep.
And how many people, I do it on a daily basis, where people I've got so frustrated and angry because they've sent someone a text message and it hasn't come back. And they're like this. I'm feeling really angry.
Well, I'm waiting on one now, actually. Not a message, but someone I'm doing a bit of work with. And there's a website I've done that's offline. And I need this other person that hosts the website to get in touch with me quickly because they're the only person who can fix it. And, you know, they're not getting straight back to me. And it's really annoying me.
Yeah. I need it now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But what does that do for us and stresses all the way down the line? You know, being able to relax back into more kind of organic situation. You plant something in the spring and it grows through the summer and you harvest it in the autumn. Yeah. You know, that's the way it works. And we want it now.
I know. There's a hierarchy of like how long you'll wait for something. So if you send a text message, you expect a reply usually within an hour or two. An email, I think there's 24-hour grace really. And then obviously a letter is a bit longer. But even things like WhatsApp now. Do you use WhatsApp?
Yeah.
It's like a text messaging platform for folks that don't know. But not only do you send a message, but when you can see, if you look into the bottom corner of a message, it gives you different tick marks. So one tick means it's been sent. Two ticks means it's arrived on that person's phone. If the two ticks go blue, that means the person has read it.
Yeah, so they read it and they haven't bothered to respond.
And you can see if they're typing as well, it'll say at the top, so-and-so is typing. So if they've read it and they're like, it's like 2 hours later, you're like, what the hell? Is this person's read it and they still haven't replied?
Yeah.
So it's like, do we need to know all this stuff? Oh my word. But it does, it just fuels the stress, doesn't it? And the sense of loss in some situations, I guess.
Traveling to places like India, where you're walking, you know, you may do a bit of hitching and a bit of train and stuff like that, but no plane, so you're actually just walking and just doing the business. Your system is adjusting to the world that you're in as you move, and you're adapting as you go along. When you get in a plane, you're pulled up into the stratosphere. And then you're transported along and then dropped down. You've missed the bit in the middle.
Mm.
There's been no chance of processing as it goes along. And I think that in that sense, we're out of time with ourselves. And that goes right down to the fact if we have nuclear families, we have small families, and issues of loss and issues of people arriving. If you've got a family of four people and someone's born, that's like, wow! That's amazing. If you've got a family of maybe 50 or 100 people and one person's born, that's like, okay, it's another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's different, isn't it? Mm. But that also means when they go, if you've got 100 people, someone dies or leaves or emigrates, that's like, it's a loss.
Mm.
Yeah, if it's a family of four or two or one or three or whatever, and people start disappearing, it's like, well.
Yeah.
Difficult.
True. Okay. Anything else you'd like to add here, Sean?
Any final words
for Angela?
Yeah, well, I think that, and it's for Angela, but it's for all of us, is that in the sense that strangers are just family that we have yet to meet and yet to know, because we live in this global community of human beings, and on the basis that we all look after each other, then we're okay. We're not too good at that at the moment.
Yep.
But individually, we can start to do that. And yes, there may be people that are leaving us and people that are moving on, but there are other people around to fill the vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
And those may be other kids that we need to support. They maybe aren't our own children, but they need to be supported. Maybe it's other people in our community that need our help, you know, people that are on their own.
Sure.
You know, we've got that whole thing at the moment about Christmas is coming. And, you know, the idea that it's going to be a happy time for people actually isn't true for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be on their own. And maybe one of the things that we could be doing in terms of our attachment to others is making sure that people around us are okay.
Mm.
You know, maybe there are older people that are on their own. And maybe to have a happy, smiley face and someone to give them a meal and to be with them for a while would be a real gift. It would be a magical Christmas gift.
Yeah, definitely. It's a big issue. I mean, yeah, even in my little area, neck of the woods, you know, I'm so in the summer, spring months and early autumn, we see everyone all the time. You go, because we're all going in and out, and then it's funny.
They all disappear.
Yeah, everyone's disappeared. Like, I saw the lady that lives opposite me, Lisa, saw her this morning. because we happen to be coming back at the same time. But I hadn't seen her in weeks. It's like you live, I can see you right outside the house. Used to seeing her all the time in the summer, every day, and have a chat with her. Funny. So yeah, this is the time of year when you need to be connecting with people, isn't it?
Yeah. I can remember you talking about the lady that you went and helped her with her remote control.
Yeah, yeah. Do you want an update on that? Because we thought she'd snuffed it. We thought that was it because the house is empty and it's been redecorated and it's had some work done. But my wife chatted to someone, another lady that kind of walks by every now and again. She's all right. She's alive. She's just been moved on to a home.
Right.
So she's early 90s, but yeah.
Yeah.
She's okay, folks.
But if you hadn't been there to help her with her remote, who would have done it?
Mm.
And it's that, isn't it? It's like, if we all look after each other, we will all be all right. Yep. Always. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, tell your politician, hey.
Yeah.
Your local MP.
Who can we bomb today? Come on, let's go.
Yeah. Blimey. All right, cool. Yeah. You've got a resource of the week.
I do.
That book, isn't it? It's the...
Yeah, what I want to do is I'll put a link up for it.
Mm.
But The Prophet by Khalil Gibran. He wrote quite a few books, but The Prophet is the one. It's the famous one.
Cool.
And it's worth a read.
It's good. A snappy little read, actually.
Yeah, it's good.
Looks like he'd be good on Twitter these days.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. He's a Twitterer.
Snippets of wisdom.
Yeah. Good book.
Cool. Mine isn't hugely related to our show, but it's a video I saw last week. They've done a whole series. If you dive into the channel on YouTube, you'll find some amazing stuff. But this one's about addiction.
Yeah, right.
Everything we know about addiction is wrong.
That sounds cool.
It's a cool little animated thing with a super clever voiceover, which is impossible to disagree with. Again, it's something to send on to your local MP in terms of the war on drugs, because we've got war on everything at the moment, haven't we? But yeah, have a look at it.
Do you know what the underlying premise of this is?
Well, basically, it's there. I can't remember.
Gotcha.
You got me. I watched it like a week ago, flipping egg. I mean, if you've seen Russell Brand's stuff about we need to treat it as a healthcare issue rather than chucking people in jail.
Yeah. No, I'll have a listen to that. It's good.
But it's super poignant. Yeah. Next week we're talking about willpower.
Is that Will, like William?
Yeah, Will, he's on the show. Willpower, that's his new name. which, again, at this time of year when the nights are drawing in and people, you can kind of sap you of your energy a little bit, can't it?
Can't be bothered.
Yeah. So let's get Christmas out of the way.
Yeah.
And then you can get your mojo back.
Yeah.
New Year's a good time for that, actually, isn't it?
But yeah, good stuff.
We'll talk about willpower next week.
Okay.
In the meantime, the website livingthepresent.co.uk for all the show notes and links. Lots of other bits and bobs. Sign up for our mailing list if you want to get this show delivered to your inbox every Thursday morning. Provided I remember to do it, which I usually do. And in the meantime, have yourself a good week.
And you.
Take care.
Have a good time. See ya.
See everyone.